tonight on our Tuesday night celebration of life. I'm enjoying this format. I do hope that you'll want to participate this evening. I was just working on, in between calls, a fun Facebook post for tomorrow. It says, have you been waiting for someone to give you a stamp of approval? I've got a stamp of approval. Here it is. Grab it, ink it up, and give yourself some fun body art. It's so important as we're going through this process that we are clear that we are healing self-esteem. And we're in the very first stages of healing self-esteem by practicing connection with people. Last week we talked about the importance for us to have agape love. That agape love is seeing a situation that we're in differently, seeing the good in it, finding the good in it. Like last week when I had the flu. Matter of fact, when we talked last week, we cut our call just a little bit short, and I went right in and crashed and stayed there till the next morning. It was a little bit like that for about 3 days. I must tell you that during that week, in those moments when everything was quiet, I didn't need to feel guilty because I wasn't returning phone calls or emails or preparing things, etc., because I just couldn't. I was done physically. So all the guilt was gone. There was a peace that came. And I started writing about this morning, and I'll have a blog post up probably tomorrow, Living Life Through the Flu, or Seeing Life Through the Flu, that we want things to happen in our life that can help us quiet life down. That could be reading a scroll. That could be reading an affirmation. That could be doing a power session. We'll talk about those in a few weeks in physical creation. We want to be in a space where we quiet things down. We shut off the noise. And we can think clearly, peacefully. I had some amazing insights last week. So grateful for that experience. How can we be grateful for the flu? Because it shut off everything and opened up that opportunity. What is happening in our life? That rain that cleanses our spirit, that darkness that helps us see the stars, that pain that challenge that opens our soul, those challenges that are just reward. They are the opportunity to stretch and grow and become all we're meant to be. Do we see our challenges that way? That's agape love. Do we show up in our challenges in a way that inspires others? Do we use our challenges as reference points to help us better understand what somebody else is going through? And that's where we're headed today, as we understand this principle that everybody has a wall of resistance. Everybody has one. Are we going to throw up on that wall? Are we going to be strategic in trying to get through that wall? Are we going to have a sledgehammer and try to crash through that wall? Are we going to become masterful listeners? Are we going to practice the principles of intrinsic validation? Are we going to use our empathy and our intuition accurately to take down these walls? We know that the very first thing we want to do is start looking for the good. We talked a little bit about red flags, green flags. This isn't to be naive, it's just to refocus our thought processes. That if we want to lift and build someone, we look for what's good and we mention it, what's important to them. It helps them free themselves of their own negative dialogue about themselves so that they can show up more effective. And chances are they'll address the very things that might bother us most if we can help free them up to do so. So we want to be looking for the good, looking for what's important to individuals. Next, we're going to start playing a little bit more with this watching for doors. Watching for doors. We're listening for doors. We have this rock fortress. We have this big oak door hanging on iron hinges. And it creaks open. And we hear somebody say, I'm tired. We say, yeah, me too. Door shuts. Door opens. I'm tired. Well, share with me what happened. They take us by the hand, and we get to step into their world. Into their world. It's the easiest way to get into a world, is listening for a door And when and that's a verbal hint. Because people talk telescopically. They telescope what's really going on inside that fortress by giving us a verbal hint. Now, I don't know that people really consciously do this. I think we've been conditioned to do this because very few people actually listen. So we're like testing the waters. Does anybody really care to know what's going on in here? Does anybody really care? I ask in the book and in the material, when was the last time someone cared enough about you to step into your world and listen until you felt understood? When's the last time that happened to you? It is a very rare experience for most people. And we get to be the rare ones where we're going to begin this process of listening. Now, we can have some interesting conversations with someone when we are listening and we make it about them. But we almost always, as human beings, make it about us. So there's a couple things we want to do before we step into their world. Number one, we may have an agenda. An agenda is everything we want to sell them. It might be our need to be right, our need to fix. That's in a suitcase. It's in our left hand, and we just set it down by the door. We just set it by the door. We leave it outside. The right-hand side is all of our unhealthy habits of thinking, and we leave it outside. And we practice what Og shared with us in scroll number two. And how will I confront each with whom I come in contact? In only one way. In silence and to myself, I'll address him and say, I love you. Though spoken in silence, these words will shine in my eyes and wrinkle my brow, bring a smile to my lips and echo in my voice. And his heart will be opened. And who is there who will say nay to my goods when his heart feels my love? Now, I mentioned in this material, which you had a chance to listen to this week, and also in the book today, I begin a new life on this very section, that in the last about 20 years, the neuroscientists have made some enormous breakthroughs. I think one of the more exciting is called the mirror neuron. Now, many of you heard of this when we talked in your coaching, but just be reminded of how critical this truth is, this physiological reality, that right at the top of the brain stem, we have this little thing called the amygdala. It's a little almond-shaped thing. And highly empathetic people have an overabundance of a mirror neuron, mirror, mirror on the wall, and that's where most of them reside. These are very peculiar neurons. They fire at twice the speed of a normal neuron. So here we are, approaching someone. Their optic center, their hearing, pick up all kinds of sensory data from us. We have 200 sets of muscles on our face. 200. You can write down the algebra. It's 2 to the power of 200 minus 1. It's billions of different possible facial expressions. The person we're talking to, their mirror neurons can pick them all up. They can discern all the messages. So whatever we are thinking, whatever it is, it leaks out on our face. It leaks out in our voice. It just leaks out. Very subtle ways. Sometimes an FBI profiler couldn't even pick it up, but a mirror neuron can. And that mirror neuron, through the optic center, instead of going to the thalamus and creating a picture, goes right straight back to the amygdala. I think I've mentioned to some of you, not all of you, that Dan Goldman, in his book Social Intelligence, writes about a man who had affective blindness. This is a person who could not see pictures with his eyes, but the nerve between his eye and his amygdala was still attached. And they could put pictures in front of his face, and though he could not see the image, the emotion from the facial picture would register with his amygdala. And his mirror neurons would send a message to the brain, the release of ligands and neuropeptides into the body, and at a cellular level, he would feel that emotion. And he would feel it before he had conscious thought. Picture feeling. Bam. Angry. Happy. The exact words were something like alarming accuracy. Well, people who have their eyesight, who also have that connection back to their amygdala, they're seeing, and it is activating their amygdala, their mirror neurons. That signal's going to the brain, release of chemicals in the body, before they have conscious thought, twice the speed of a normal neuron. Bam! They are already feeling before we open our mouths. Before we open our mouths. That is why I will fake it until I make it is really naive, if not dangerous. We don't get to fake this. So when we're standing at someone's door, the door is open and we've said, tell me more about that. We already want to be in this space where we're saying silently to myself, I love you, so that everything about us is coming into alignment with the phrase, I love you. Shining in my eyes, it's unwrinkling my brow, it's bringing a smile to my lips and echoing in my voice. And who is there who will say nay to my goods when his heart feels my love? This is the law of attraction. A lot said about it, a lot taught, but this is the law of attraction. The law of attraction is when we show up in an energy, facial expressions congruent with I love you, I truly am here to serve you, and a person's mirror neurons read that, send message, release to the body, they feel safe, and they move into the conversation. They step in to the conversation. It is safe. We are attractive. That is the law of attraction. So before we step into someone's world, our agenda, our baggage, and we have prepared ourselves by saying silently to myself, I love you. Now we walk into their world. And now we get to stay there. And we get to keep listening for more and more doors to open to take us deeper and deeper into a person's world. Now I talk about, in this section, this watching for doors. If you have a copy of Today I Begin a New Life, I wrote a story in here starting on page 94, which paints this picture of a man metaphorically walking from person to person, confronting doors and listening and watching people in relationships. Even relationships have tremendous challenges. We watched a movie last night, Great Hope Rising. If you've had a chance to see that, if you haven't, you're in a relationship, I'd highly recommend you go. Hope Springs. Some of you have seen that, you're going, wow, Dave, you got the wrong movie. I did. Hope Springs. Great Hope Springs is the name of the city. A couple who was going in for intensive therapy for their relationship, especially their intimacy. But there's an example in this book about a conversation between a husband and wife where the husband was oblivious, just oblivious. And his wife had a really rough experience that day. Dear friends, husband, wife were getting divorced, and husband already had a new girlfriend, and she was worried. So she started asking little hints. You know? And he never picked up on them. Then I give you an example of what it would sound like if the husband had picked up on it, so you can feel the difference between these two. So if you have that book, go to page 94 through about 98 and read that section. So you can start to hear this dialogue. This week we're going to want to practice hearing these doors. Now I often carry around, when I'm away from the office, I'm always carrying my journal around. I'll write these things down. Have a conversation with someone, I'll just take notes. Little doors, ideas, things I'd like to step into their world. I'd like to know more about that. Ooh, I'd like to know a little bit more about that. Our focus is totally on the other person. We're not coming with an agenda. We're not coming with baggage. We want to understand where that person is. Now, we as human beings have a tendency to listen, to respond. We're listening so that we can respond. This week, we're only going to listen to understand. I wonder what they mean by that. I wonder what that meant. Gosh, what happened there? We're totally listening to them. This is a great habit to get into. It makes you the most interesting person at any party, because almost everybody's come to tell their story. And we listen, we step into their world, and as we listen, our intuition will bring to the surface questions. Questions that we can ask. Wow, when you got laid off, did you ever feel this way? And we're pulling that experience from our own life when we had a traumatic event. They say, not quite. Well, share with me what happened to you. What came up for you? And they begin to share. This is such an important piece in the process of knowing that we're probably closer than we thought we were. I'm going to give you tonight some dangerous landmines. Some of these are in the recordings and some of them in my book. I want to give you both of them. If you're on the book, you're on page 107. That when we're stepping into someone's world and listening, sometimes a person will give us a caustic, a hurtful, sarcastic, rhetorical comment. And when we hear one of these, our survival instinct will sometimes kick in. You know, how could you ever get involved in something like that? And we take it personally. We're not holding up our shield, our awareness, as Og says in Scroll 2, to capture the arrows of hate and the spears of anger and to turn them the softest of rain. No, we didn't have our awareness up. Boom, hit us in the heart. We react. We take it personally. This week, we want to hold up our shield of awareness. What are you doing? How could you get involved in something like that? And we simply say, well, share with me your experience. And they begin to share. And we diffuse a challenge. Number two is we want to prematurely tell our stories. Now, we want to tell our stories and have interesting conversation. But quite often, someone starts to tell a story, and it prompts one from our own experience, and we can't wait to tell it. And the whole time they're telling theirs, we're trying to figure out how to fit ours in. When we're in somebody else's world, this is not the place to tell our story. This is the place for us to listen to theirs and ask questions that demonstrate we understand where they were, how they felt, how exciting it was for them. If we know how exciting it was, we'll know the question to ask. If we don't know the question to ask, we don't yet know. Which brings us to number three, shortcuts. This is when we say, you know, oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I've been there. If we know, we do know the question to ask. If we can't think of a question that demonstrates that we know where they are, then we're going to want to find out more about where they are. It's that simple. No shortcuts. Number four is missing the target. This is when we ask a question. They say, no, that's not what happens for me. I had an experience like that today in assessment debrief. Very simple. Well, how does it work for you? Oh, I do this, this, and this. Oh, okay. And when that happens, does this ever occur? Oh, yeah. We're right back on track. Don't be worried when you're asking a question if someone says, nope, never done that. You're much closer than you thought you were. Just stay with them. Number five, the dreaded brain freeze. This is when we're listening, and all of a sudden we say, oh, I don't know what to say. What would Dave say? Ah! And we have those freezes. We all have them. And we simply say, I'm listening. They turn to us and, well, what do you think? Oh, I'm just listening. That would get us back into the conversation. Number six, a concern that this takes too long. It's going to take as long as it takes. We don't get to speed up connection other than we become better and better at listening and better at asking empathetic questions, cutting to the quick sooner. That will come with the practice and mastery of the art. But the thought that it takes too long, anytime someone cuts short connection, that's quite a mouthful, cuts short connection, we end up paying for it in damage control. We get past the intros quicker, but we don't accomplish the task because we're spending it trying to fix problems. Number seven is too broad a context. We see this all the time. Someone has a home-based business, for example, and they sit down with someone over lunch, and they're a little uncomfortable, and so they say, well, tell me about your life. And an hour and a half later, they're still telling them about their life. There's nothing wrong with narrowing the context of a conversation. You still care where they are. You're still not bringing an agenda. You're just narrowing the context, which is, thank you for sitting with me at lunch. I wanted to step into your world and find out about your experience with home-based businesses, or find out your experience with weight loss products, or find your experience with, an example of a network marketing arrangement. We narrow the context, and then we sit and we listen. For a door, then we step into it. Oh, what happened next? We're more likely to find out things we'd love to know if we're honest and clear and we don't play games. This is something we cannot use to manipulate another human being. So we can't go through an hour and a half and then say, well, the reason why I invited you to lunch was lead balloon drops right in the middle of the pie, splatters all over the place, and destroys the conversation. Context too broad. Well, here we are. We cared enough to leave our baggage and our agenda at the door, come in a spirit of silently to myself, I love you. We step into their world, and once we're in their world, we keep listening for additional doors to open. We step into those. The deeper we go, the greater they feel understood. When we think we understand, we demonstrate by asking questions. And we know when that person knows that we understand. Because we'll feel the walls come down. We're finally safe. We cared enough to know where they are. This brings us to a new moment of decision. What do we do now? If you're sitting in an airplane just carrying on a conversation, it may be enough. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I've enjoyed our conversation. Yeah, me too. Wish you the best wherever you're going. Shake hands and part ways. At the same time, in that conversation, we may discover that we have solutions that would bless their life. And this is a new moment of decision. And we consider seriously, would my product, my approach to living, would it serve this person? I talk about the dream that I had when I'd been pondering this concept for several months. And in the dream, I'm on the top of a mountain with someone who's emotionally paralyzed. They ask me if I'll go down and help move their boat to a safe harbor, and I do. I come back. We're connected again. I wake up and realize that the boat I was moving was their dream. Many of you on the phone are in the business of helping people realize their dreams. And there will be times when you must take a stand for someone and help them move their dream to a safe harbor. Is your harbor a safe harbor? Is what you're offering something that would bless their life? Have they got the capacity, capability, time, freedom to be able to actually do it? Do they have the desire, the intention, the work ethic? These are things we're making decisions about at this new moment of decision. Because I could shake hands, having given the greatest gift I can give a human being, the gift of understanding, and I could part ways, and I have made a friend, because I make a friend with everyone I meet. However, as Dan McCormick said, some of my friends need my product. Some of my friends need my business opportunities, the network marketing world. Another person may be talking to a child. This child truly needs some guidance I could provide. This friend of mine could use some counsel. If we decide that what we have truly can be of value, then we do one more thing before we share. We ask ourselves, is this the right time? When we want to fix somebody, it's always the right time. When we want to bless somebody, tomorrow might be the best time. Tonight, they may have just needed us to listen. So do an analysis on timing. Is this the right time? If it is, then proceed. If it's not, wait till it is, then proceed. And when we proceed, we're going to gain agreement to do so. And it sounds like this. These are just my words. I deeply appreciate you sharing with me this and this and this. What caught my attention the most was this piece. You know, I have some ideas for how to address that, how to solve that, how to serve you. Would you be open to me sharing? If they say no, don't proceed. If they say yes, then I want you to envision this. You're taking them by the arm, walking out of their house, you're reaching down and picking up your agenda, the baggage you're going to leave there in the trash can. You're going to pick up your baggage, throw it in the trash can, pick up your agenda, walk over the bridge into your house. They will sit down in your house. You'll open up your briefcase, pull out just what is needed, and you'll share it. This is gaining agreement. Now, when we step into their world, or we share, and they're in our world, and they ask a question, they've got something that they're concerned about. We generally call it an objection. Most of the time when someone raises an objection at this stage in the process, we're just a touch bit impatient. We want to just resolve it. We want to resolve the objection. We want to answer the objection. We got all these answers to objections. The truth is this. If we study objections, objections are generally comments that demand a question. They're rarely stated as a question, which should demand an answer. We're almost always answering comments. I find that clever, interesting. It's kind of strategic. It's kind of, frankly, insulting, I think, for many. When someone gives us an objection, we ask a question. Well, how long has that been a concern to you? What kinds of things have you tried in the past? What has worked best for you? How long have you been feeling that way? Have you missed any opportunities because of this? Are you ready to take it on now? This is how we handle objections. It's been my experience that if we will truly listen, what we're doing is stepping back into their world and listening. And as they share, we begin to understand the magnitude of their concern. And again, we may have an answer, a solution, a way to solve that. May I share with you a way that you might overcome that? Certainly, but not immediately, not till we truly understand. We think we understand all the time, but it doesn't matter what we think. The only thing that matters is that they feel understood. And until they feel understood, their walls are not going to come down with this objection. They now feel understood. It's now safe. Now we can propose ideas that could help them address that fear or that concern. Walls down. intrinsic validation is not about being naively kind. When I'm stepping into somebody's world, I am kind. I'm very concerned that the tone of my voice is appropriate for them. But I'm creating a safe place in everything that I do. What I say, how I say it. This isn't a game. This is respect for them. This is seeing their need and meeting it. That's what we're going to want to practice. And as we do so, the walls come down, cooperation floods out, we learn a great deal about them. New moment of decision. Is this the right time? Timing, is this the right moment? Then we boldly share. Boldly share. The concern is that when intrinsic validation gets used as just one more way to avoid a conversation about a product or a business, then we're using it inappropriately. Intrinsic validation is, I care enough about you to find out where you really are. That's all I'm doing. It's about clarity. It's about getting crystal clear about where they are. There is always a chance, it's rare, but there's always a chance that when you're in this person's world, you discover they're a rattlesnake. Or that they don't have the energy or the desire. And the last thing we want to be doing is pushing an agenda on someone who doesn't want one. A solution to a problem who doesn't want a solution. However, if we have someone who can be served by what we have, we boldly stand up for them. Boldly stand up for them. Intrinsic validation is not about naive kindness, it's about accuracy. There's no manipulation in this because we actually have to care to show up and to get inside their wall and to create an absolute safe place for them. We cannot be playing games. This is not a game. This is called connection. And it's a sacred and wonderful opportunity. Well, I want to open this up to any questions. We can brainstorm scenarios or examples. We can role play if you'd like. Anything that anyone on this phone would find valuable tonight, I'm here to serve. So I'm going to open this up for a few minutes for anyone who would like to take intrinsic validation, ask questions about it, explore it, apply it to a situation, talk about a situation. Is there anyone that would like to come out this evening and let me serve you? Okay. Well, let's take this and practice it. Very specific practices. Red flags, green flags. Looking for the good, what's important to a person. Very specific practice, listening for a door to open. Very specific practice, when it does, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. I'm listening. As we step into their world, very specific process. Agenda at the door, baggage in the trash can. Silent to myself, I love you. We step into their world. We stay in their world by listening. For an additional door to open to go deeper into their world. The deeper we go, the more we understand. When a person feels understood, that's when their walls come down. The fact we understand doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we understand. It only matters that they know that we understand. Walls come down, new moment of decision. Is this something that I would serve them? Is this the right time to share it? And if so, gain agreement and share. Now, if we're enjoying the ride and all of a sudden we're feeling uncomfortable because we're shifting into this agenda of sharing our advice and that's really what I want to do in the first place, just know we're not doing that unless there's a need established. We owe it to them. We owe it to them to share the solution that will bless their life if they're in fact ready to hear it. If we get an objection, then we step right back into their world until we understand. Then we invite them back into ours, basic validation. This is the thing Scott Irwin, who I was with 2 weekends ago in Houston, says he has made millions of dollars and saved millions of dollars. He says, and I sell pipe, for heaven's sake. May we have the courage to be the rare one, the one who will listen until a person feels understood. It's memorable what has happened to us because it's so rare. Let us begin the process of being the rare ones. Now, next week, we're going to start into the section on mental creation. Many of you have been through this a few times. Mental rehearsal, exploration, plan, you can rattle them off. The question is, today, when we had that discouraging moment, we've all had them. I had one today. Did we pull out our tomahawk and say, not going there today, or did we go in the dark dungeon of despair and discouragement? Did we spend any time in fantasy today? Or did we consciously go back into creation? This is why we continually go through this process, is to remind ourselves, this isn't about theory. This is about what do we do in the pivotal moments of each day. Do we make this choice and stay in creation? Because I know what happened today because I stayed in creation. Do you know what happened today because you stayed in creation? Did you get that inspired idea, that impression? Did you act on it? Did you create something you would not have had any other way? This is what we're going to start into next week. It's going to take us probably a week or two to get through it. I want to go through it very thoroughly this time to make sure that we're putting it into practice on a daily basis, that this is part of our practice of life. Using our mind constructively to manifest inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges that will ignite our passion. Because if we're not using it this way, we're in discouragement or despair or fantasy. And the work we will face will be boring, mundane, repetitious, burdensome, and hard. We want it to be passion-driven. Come next week prepared to take this on and learn how to live passion-driven by using your mind constructively. Look forward to being with you next week. Everybody have a great week, and we'll see you next Tuesday evening for our next session.